Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a weekly podcast of the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press, focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Freep beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. What is up, fellas?
I'm just glad Chris has made it back to the great state of Michigan after his travels.
Yeah, no comment on my travel. I'm not even going to talk about it.
Another great Chris Solari story. That's all I'll say.
I am in person, not in a car somewhere. That's all I'll say.
Hey, and it's, you know what? I've driven that drive many times to State College. Used to do it instead of flying. So
as have I.
It's not the end of the world.
Well, guys, we got a lot to talk about this week. A lot has changed with the Michigan State basketball since we last convened. Two big wins. They beat Maryland on Saturday night and then Penn State on Tuesday night. That's three straight top 25 wins for them. We'll talk about what this means for the team going forward. And then after that, we will talk about Michigan State seniors as Senior Day is coming up at Sunday versus Ohio State. Then we'll preview Sunday's Ohio State game. And then we're also going to talk a little bit of football with Scotty Hazleton hired as new defensive coordinator for Michigan State. And then we will make our predictions for Sunday afternoon's game versus Ohio State. All right, guys, let's start with basketball. As I just said a few seconds ago, two big wins over the past week. Where are your guys' heads at with this team and maybe what this team's going to be able to do in the next month plus?
Well, I mean, I think they were obviously massive wins, and they were massive for different reasons, partly. One was Maryland showed, in beating Maryland the way they did at Maryland in that game, that Maryland had had a chance to clinch a share of the Big Ten title and all that. They played at a level that you can win a national championship, right? There is nobody I've seen in the country, and I'm a college hoops junkie, and this is a year where there's not an elite team or even a couple teams that really scare you.
But no Atlantic Sun teams?
No Atlantic Sun teams. I can't even recall Atlantic Sun. Jacksonville State, probably, isn't Atlantic Sun.
Isn't that where Snacks is?
Snacks is probably in the Atlantic Sun, yeah.
Yeah. We like Snacks here.
If you haven't seen the video yet of Snacks circling or surfacing, the manager for I forget which team he's on.
Is it Jackson State?
I'm not sure. Yeah, big dude making a three. Team manager playing on senior night. Pretty cool.
Not just a three from about 35 feet out.
Hey, shooter, shoot, man. Yeah. The line is just a suggestion if you're a true shooter.
That's right.
And true shooters don't follow the shot. Don't ever follow your shot if you're a real shooter because the shot's going in. But I thought they were important for different reasons. One, against Maryland, they showed they can play at a certain level and sustain it for a game. And that's what you need to win big. The problem is, to get to a national championship, you got to win four or five in a row. And I thought that's what Penn State did, that game did for Michigan State, in terms of my faith in their belief and their ability to do that. Because that was the disaster. That was the type of game that happened against Middle Tennessee. Team goes 9 of 13 from three. You're in a hole. And those things can happen in the NCAA tournament. And Michigan State has not been a consistent team always. And they showed they're at a different place in terms of their own discipline and poise and where their players are. I mean, a guy like Rocket Watts, his ability to score 6 points in 60 seconds the way he did early in that second half, that's something like last year's team didn't have that. Last year's team didn't fall in the holes this year's team did. But if something really went wrong, like Texas Tech did to them or even Bradley did to them, it was harder for last year's team to fix it. This year's team has a guy like Rocket Watts who can and has more parts that can just give it to you quickly. So I thought that they were important for different reasons.
I still think I'd always has been talking a lot about that three-game stretch starting with the Iowa game, that if they could win that, then he felt – it's interesting how his story has evolved. He said, I thought we could beat Maryland. And then after they beat Penn State, I told the guys that if we beat Iowa, we're going to win the next two. So my guess is – he probably told him a little bit more than that. That's my guess. You know, why
win
not?
The next three?
Yeah. Win the next four. Win out.
Maybe.
But I do think that, to me, though, it didn't start with that. It started with that win at Illinois, because even though that Maryland game was in there, they showed the fight and the resolve to get back in that game. And the exact same problem that bit them against Penn State with the three ball at the end of that game, that's what did it. I mean, it was 14 straight points, but they scratched and clawed, and that was something that, even though we've talked so much this year about how Breslin can lie, to do that, to get yourself back in games and to finally get one over the hump, that one, they were right there. And I thought that was a three-quarter game that they played.
So let me disagree with you and agree with you. Like, I believe, like, Illinois, that first half was something else, right? Like, that was the first time we probably saw them play at a level that you go, hey, that looks like it could play in Atlanta.
On the road.
On the road, too, right. Yeah. Well, yeah, but yeah, in the home.
I mean, listen, they drummed teams at home. Yeah, I mean, they drummed Illinois. They drummed, right. They drummed a good Minnesota team at home. They I mean, they drummed Wisconsin.
I don't take anything that happens at home seriously, very rarely.
Yeah, but there's you may say there's not truth in there, but there is. Because,
some years.
Because there's that's your ceiling. That, to me, is your ceiling.
But right look, here's the argument against home games and big wins, is that every year Michigan State, most years Michigan State has a lot of big wins at home. They mm-hmm. dominate teams. They run away from them. And their NCAA tournament record and showing varies, and their postseason ceiling varies. But the home thing is sort of a constant. The home, I'm not saying the home court's entirely a lie. Like, I thought the Iowa game, there was a lot of truth in it, right? Because they'd shown themselves to be vulnerable at home against Penn State and against Maryland, and they were on the ropes again, and then they came back. But I do agree. Illinois was the first time you went, huh?
Yeah, and then, their backs were against the wall. And at then that Maryland point, you lost three in a row. You were on the road at a top 25 team that at that point was right there in contention to win it all, and still is. I think that, you know, that to me was the game where everything changed. But the Iowa game, like you said, I think that's the one where there was belief instilled a little bit more. And, you know, the way that they came out at Maryland and start to finish was, I'd say, their best game of the year.
They looked like a doubt. They looked like a team at the Final Four that
they day. Ran they looked, the ball. Yeah. They looked like a team. The things that we saw with the Iowa game, I think I mentioned it last week about Winston getting an inbounds pass, and you saw that from the opening tip all the way out in that Maryland game. And then the Penn State game, I've never seen a team, and I'm talking about Penn State here, that got so hot and then just got absolutely iced by the other team on the defensive
end. And they got undisciplined. I mean,
it wasn't
State,
like they weren't guarded on those 10 threes they hit. I mean, there were some that they did, but
that was actually the problem. I think one of the problems for Penn State was that they made a lot of tough shots. And so then they shot themselves out of it a little bit.
Well, they had open looks in the second half at times, too, and they just weren't canning them.
One of the things Dane Fife said after the game was that they knew they could guard a little better, but they also knew they didn't think Penn State could keep that pace up. So his biggest question, their biggest question in the second half was, do they have the discipline, talking about Michigan State, to not try to get it all back at once?
Yeah.
And they showed that. And that
But the weird thing about it is they basically did get it all back
in
at
a row.
Once.
They won 24-3.
Yeah.
I mean, they overtook them with a 24-3 run out of the gate, including 9 straight, and then I think 11 straight in that run.
But if you look at those possessions, they didn't have this desperation to them. And that's what he's talking about.
Right.
You know what I mean? The idea that, you know, let's.
You know what they looked like? They looked like they said to themselves, we know we're the better team.
And that's interesting because Penn State, when they played it in Breslin, I was pretty sure Penn State was the better team.
Yeah.
And that's what was so interesting. That's why there's something real to what's happening, because I think Penn State and Maryland are terrific teams. Now, Maryland then had a rough one against Rutgers, which helped Michigan State, obviously. What's been weird for me in this whole process is I've never looked at this year as a year where the Big Ten championship was really part of, yes, they'd like to win it. And I think now that it's in front of them, they really want to win it. But it's never really been part of the equation. This year was always about, can you get yourself to a place in March where you're playing in your role? And that's what I've thought to be more important. And that, when I look at the Maryland games and the Penn State games, I see two teams that could also be playing in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. I think they have the goods to do that, and that's what I think is impressive.
Now, I'm going to disagree with that, too, because I think that this was, I think, up until the loss at Indiana, you know, they had that stinker at Purdue, which you can write off. But then the Indiana game, I think that was where some goals maybe were not necessarily changed, but where you kind of thought they just need to get playing a little better or a lot better in some instances. But, I mean, you can't ask for the serendipity that they've gotten with – I mean, Rutgers just had to win that game for them. And, I mean, for Maryland to have to go to Rutgers at that point in the year – speaks to what Izzo has said about the schedule. I mean, that's not a place you want to play at this time of year.
No, and it's brutal. But I mean,
Michigan State didn't have to go there this year.
But you don't want to go to Maryland either. And then obviously Penn State's got, you know, it's an okay atmosphere, but not a great atmosphere.
Penn State, I thought, you know, I call that the home court disadvantage, because every time Michigan State would make a run, that crowd went quiet. They were going nuts when they would hit the threes. But when there was an empty possession, I've said this, and I've been around that state long enough. I don't feel like Penn State basketball fans really know that much about basketball.
Well, and that's the problem for them is where every other team, it's sort of like Northwestern, every other team gets home court advantage and you right. don't to the same point. And makes
Unless
your whole,
Michigan State's at Northwestern.
It makes your whole season harder. And to your point on Indiana, though, and to my point on this season not being about the Big Ten championship, I think that was where, talking to Cassius Winston, I really came away with the impression that, yeah, he'd like to win the Big Ten title, but that ain't why he's back. That ain't what he's worried about. And so that sort of was a tone to me. And again, he was in a different place than I think struggling a little bit. And so that you know, I don't think his priorities were entirely basketball related either.
Right. And I think that's maybe where some of that, you know, I think you wrote about it. I mean, that could be where some of that friction with Izzo comes. Because that does mean something to Izzo. Always does. I mean, the fact that he's only had basically one group of guys win three straight Big Ten titles, and that was the team that won four in a row from 99 or 98 to 2001. This is a moment for this program. I mean, these guys are finally starting to understand and embrace that a little bit when that 2000 team came back, and even though they lost that game, I mean, that's the group that won three in a row. You have a chance to put yourself right there with them. Izzo talks about the footprints. That's a footprint for this group.
No doubt. And people think that Izzo, I mean, Izzo's best years were those late 90s teams. But this is the next best group. Like, if you look at his Big Ten championships and the run, there's like a decade where there really weren't a lot of them, you know? And so this has been a pretty good late career. Rebirth is the wrong word because they weren't like they'd fallen down, but it was, you know what I mean? It's definitely at the height of things quite a bit late.
I don't know. I think he could stay 20 more years.
I don't think he's retiring anytime soon. The more he's around, the longer I think he'll stay.
Yeah.
Maybe he's discovered the fountain of youth and he will be here till he's 85.
Boy, he'll be cranky then. Can you imagine 85-year-old is so forgetful?
Well, I think about Judd in the final years and then I think about Judd back in 1994 and Judd in 1977. It's just like it's worn off. I don't necessarily know if he'd be more cranky, but
I will say
be
this.
Amplified.
I used to think coaching was something men didn't do in their 70s, but a much more stressful job. Apparently you have to be 78 years old to run for these days to be president. So who knows? Maybe you can coach college basketball on your 80s.
This is the difference in life expectancy from the previous generation.
And if you're Tom Izzo, I'm going to throw this out there, a little off topic.
This is what the podcast is for.
No, but if you're Tom Izzo and you're going into this new transfer world and you built a program that's one of the top programs that's going to be a place that gets a lot of transfers that want to come, you may not have to recruit as hard at 78. You may just every year just have to say, we take three new transfers. Top, you know, you just let them come in. You know, you're three top mid-major guys.
That the only problem to me is that's the old dog new tricks right there. And that's...
I'm talking 78-year-old Tom Izzo. We're talking
but that
14
runs countercurrent to what
13 years from now.
That runs completely countercurrent to his belief structure.
Chris,
with,
you and I won't
that.
Be alive then.
I was going to say, none of us might not even be alive
I
in
might not even
years.
Make it to this podcast. Let's not be kidding.
We may not make it to the end of the summer if this coronavirus thing is a thing.
Okay.
I know. Got really dark there.
Yeah.
Wow.
By the way, I'm going to be annoyed if the coronavirus...
If it's real?
No, if
I mean, not real, but I mean it actually...
If it screws up the NCAA tournament, because I look forward to that. Like, the Olympics can go away. I don't really care. Or it could be postponed, but this will bother me. And you know where it'll really start, and we're gonna have to start like cultures that eat bats. We're gonna have to talk to these people. Like, you're starting pandemics. Like, let's not do that.
How do you start that conversation? Hey, stop eating bats.
Yeah,
what exactly is that conversation?
You just make that a crime beyond any crime. Like the punishment, the two largest punishments in this world, beyond capital murder, and it should be for recruiting a player into the transfer portal off another campus and eating a bat. If you do those two things, sentences have to be
assigned. I love the wide range.
You know what? You know where you're safer from the coronavirus?
Where's that?
In a rental car.
Unless the person before you had the coronavirus.
Yeah, there's always that chance, but there's only one. That's only one, not... How many were on your flight yesterday?
Yeah, no, the person 70? Was coughing next 80? To me, too. So I got home and showered with a wire brush. It was disgusting.
Yeah. I won that one. That's all I'm trying to sell myself on this.
If I ever get into a leadership position, Graham, you'll be the germ czar.
Thank you.
I'll put
that.
You in charge.
First thing we do is eliminate attendance policies in high school. You know what contributes to germs more than anything? Teachers who say, if you only have three absences, you don't have to take the final exam. That's irresponsible. Anyway, let's move on.
You know what? I just want, because I always love bringing up this fact. You know how germs are transmitted? when you're really hot, when you're really sweaty, and you're touching another person's sweaty, hot, sick mess on a basketball. How's that pickup game coming?
Okay.
Silence. All right. I love it.
All right. Well, let's talk a little about the Big Ten race and the Big Ten tournament in general here. At the moment, we were recording here on Thursday afternoon. We have four teams tied for first, at least in the loss column in the Big Ten, with Maryland, Wisconsin, and Michigan State, all at 13-6, and Illinois is at 12-6. And after Wisconsin's big win last night, according to the Big Ten Network, who tweeted out what the brackets for the Big Ten tournament would look like if the season ended today, Wisconsin would be the one seed, Michigan State would be the two, Maryland three, and Illinois four. So they would be the four teams that get the double byes. And then in the second round, that would leave number 9 Michigan versus number 8 Rutgers, number 10 Purdue versus number 7 Ohio State, with 5 Penn State at 5, Iowa 6, and then I guess I'll just read them all at this point. Nebraska versus Minnesota in the 12-13 game, and Indiana Northwestern 11-14 game. I thought it was interesting that Wisconsin's win last night really kind of may have done quite a bit for them just in terms of the seeding.
Well, it all depends on what happens with Illinois.
And here's Kevin Pauga just tweeted this out. There are still 512 tiebreaker scenarios.
Yeah.
The Big Ten Network's been tweeting this out since December. I mean, nothing. Yeah. I mean, I love the Big Ten, and they clearly have a stock in this, Big Ten Network, but they clearly have, you know, a stake in this, I should say. But it's getting, and I find it fun. What bothers me is people think I don't like the Big Ten Tournament. I like the Big Ten Tournament. What people just need to understand is you shouldn't be ever tweeting this out if you're not tweeting out the scenarios for the end of the regular season, right? Because that's what matters.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's
yeah. I mean, there's only one or two games left depending on each team, so right. That's why I thought maybe might be worth a discussion at this point.
Fair for us now.
Yeah, yeah. And to that, right now, with waiting on that Illinois Ohio State game, the likeliest of possibilities that Michigan State ends up as the one seed, with 224 of that. That total that KP
that's
tweeted.
Wisconsin losing
it. Yep. And well, then 160 so, for the second seed, 112 for the third, and 16 for the fourth. And really, the big thing, if all four of these teams win out and are tied, Michigan State gets the one overall seed. And, you know, looking at the schedule, it's not going to be easy, I don't think, for some of them. I mean, but I do think that,
Here's why I think MSU is going to wind up as the two seed. Because I think three of them are going to win out. I think Illinois is going to lose to Ohio State. They're a five and a half point underdog, and that's Thursday night. We're recording this on Thursday, so depending on when you listen to this, some of this may be decided. Wisconsin is at Indiana, not an easy game, but if they win that,
also a short turn for Wisconsin.
If three of them are tied, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Michigan State, then Wisconsin wins that tiebreaker. That's the only way MSU loses a tiebreaker, is if it's the three of those teams. I mean, even head-to-head, Michigan State wins the tiebreaker. It's only if the three of those teams, I believe.
I think there's a couple more that go into that. Just looking at those numbers right there, when you've got 160 or 100.
Well, that's because somebody could lose, is what I'm
right,
saying.
Right, right.
But if all of them,
But really, what's
Michigan State wins, I mean, there's only one way they can not.
Michigan State's, anything that happens with their seeding is all predicated on the teams that they're right now, either tied with or Illinois.
Well, if Michigan State wins, though, I don't believe they can be below the two.
I believe that's correct.
So I believe if they win Sunday, they're the one or the two. Again, how much any of that matters depend. Like, let me give you an example. If you're Michigan State, and say all this holds elsewhere, you don't want to be the one because you don't want to play. I don't know that I want to play Michigan Rutgers winner in the quarterfinal, or I do if it's Rutgers, because Michigan State to me, and again, this is just me, you need a way to check out. Right, and the only way you got to play hard against Michigan. You got to give it everything. I'm not saying you're trying to lose intentionally, but what you're not going to do is what you just did at Penn State. You don't go into this tournament 3 games in 3 days, a tournament that the Big Ten doesn't even finish in time to celebrate before the brackets
or matter for the bracket for that matter.
Correct, and yeah, right. It doesn't even matter in the NCAA tournament, the final game. You don't play Xavier Tillman 38 minutes, 3 straight games. So what you do in this tournament, to me, is you come up with a plan, a load management plan. You're going to play Foster Lawyer.
Ooh, you just killed Tom Izzo.
I know. But
he's not going to make it to 85 now.
But you're going to play Foster Lawyer 7 minutes. And if that costs you the game, so be it. You're not losing the game. You know what I mean? You're going to play.
That's kind of what happened last year. And
yeah, Foster Lawyer ruined it last year. Yeah. I mean, if you want a moment to see Michigan State the closest – I've seen Michigan State lose some of these in the conference tournament where they didn't look totally engaged. But I've never seen we've watched a whole year of Cassius Winston go through something that's left him at times not as totally engaged.
Yeah.
I've still never seen him less engaged than he was at the beginning of the Ohio State game in the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament. That Izzo, we were sitting right behind him. Izzo said to him at one point, "Do you even want to play?" And Winston sat down and then eventually decided and went in. And of course, the whole thing gets ruined because Foster Lawyer hits like 4 3-pointers.
Yeah.
And they had to beat Ohio State. And then Wisconsin wasn't that competitive the next day. Then you're playing Michigan. You might as well win that. You're in the final.
You're already there.
But if you play Michigan, it's a rivalry game. There's too much stink that comes from losing that.
Right.
You have to play out.
Tom Izzo could not play Michigan and have a laissez-faire attitude.
You want to and you don't know where Michigan's going to wind up in this whole thing, too. But you do not want to play Michigan in that first game because you want a game that if you lose, big whoop. And Rutgers will be a team that we fired up. This is the first time they've been in the tournament where they think they have a legitimate shot. I think, and those are the teams that will be, I think Penn State will be, and Penn State thinks this is for the Big Ten championship because Pat Chambers thinks this is the Big Ten championship. He said that when Penn State beat Michigan State in East Lansing, he came out and said that, you know, they were trying to get everything in line in time for the Big Ten tournament. Like, he doesn't even understand it. He's an East Coast guy. But so those are the teams that are truly motivated to be in this are usually teams that feel they were the better team, didn't have a great regular season. I think Michigan will be one. I think Michigan will be very motivated. You want to avoid those teams if you're Michigan State.
You guys mentioned Cassius Winston. I wanted to get a hot take here from you guys. Or anything to make of him and Izzo getting in an argument during the Penn State game?
Yeah, I think a lot to make that Cassius Winston is engaged and that Tom Izzo is engaging him. And you're starting to see some of that friction that has made Michigan State have some really deep runs, and that point guard Izzo dynamic always has to have that, I think, in some respects to really get things going.
Yeah, I thought, as you just said, Chris, I thought the most important thing about it was that Winston didn't back down, that Winston went at him, that he was the one who had to be held back, that he smacked Izzo's arm away at one point, this is kind of go time, right? And that's sort of the column I wrote, that these guys, there were moments that you see that this is different and this matters a ton to them. And the thing people have to understand, and this goes back to we're getting close to the Aaron Henry anniversary from a year ago with Bradley and how poorly that was handled by media everywhere, is you can disagree with how he does it, but if you're not covering the team, and even furthermore, if you're not around even more than we are, the time Izzo puts into that relationship with those guys is different. I do not see him. He is not, to me, a tyrant or a bully when we see around him in practice. The way he doesn't look to me the way Bobby Knight did, for example. I thought Bobby Knight, late in his career, there was an intimidation with him and his players that I thought did him a disservice. He creates a relationship so that when he goes at Aaron Henry like that or Cassius Winston, it's no big deal like 20 minutes later in the locker room. Yeah. And that's something you can disagree with how it looks on the court, and that's a fair comment to have.
I think you mentioned the word intimidation, and I think the difference between Knight and Izzo is intimidation versus communication. You can question how Izzo's style of communication works, and you know, as a Paisan myself, there's a lot of that, I think, within the Italian subculture. I've experienced that throughout my childhood, throughout the community that I grew up in, had a lot of an Italian presence. It's just a different dynamic.
Short, the Napoleon
comment? I think there's something like that. I think, but I do think that back and forth, those and we talked about this so many times. Those guys come in knowing exactly what this is. I mean, this is, you know, those guys come as recruits and see practices, and I think someone the other day said, but the practices is where this is built. Yep. Right? I mean, this is where this back and forth relationship is built. You know, that and the meetings that he has with them a lot of times in his office. And if you go to one practice, maybe two practices, you're going to probably know if you want to be in part of that or not.
Yep.
And a lot of like Aaron Henry, his dad, both he and his dad have said, this is what we want. We want him to do it. We tell him we want him to be on me. They know that he can produce guys like Miles Bridges and, you know, all the guys, the Shannon Browns and the guys that went on to the NBA and had some success. They've seen that. And that's what they want for themselves. And they know they have to be challenged. If you don't want to be challenged as a player, you aren't going to play for Tom Izzo.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. And look, his jaw doesn't help him. It gets clenched, his the intensity of it. But never have I thought he was going to Woody Hayes anybody.
No.
And people can disagree with me. There's lots of things you can, you know, there are bones to pick with Izzo. That's fair. I think this one gets overblown. I think people like to take shots at him these days differently than years ago. Because to me, if you're high and mighty on this now, where the hell were you in 1997?
But you know what's funny is will mention that, but they won't mention that, like a moment like when Matt Costello gave him a giant bear hug and lifted him off the floor.
Correct.
Because, I mean, and Matt Costello took it a lot. Demanding nature that you have to have as an athlete at the highest level,
yep,
it requires some of that friction.
This goes to, and this is the people you want to find credible out there, if you're reading about MSU, and this goes in anything, are people who are willing to highlight everything. So there are lots of things and lots of realms that MSU has done incorrectly and needs to be called on the carpet for. There are other things that they have tried to do well. Like if you're not looking for those things ever, or if Michigan State cures cancer, but your response is, well, why didn't they do it earlier? That's a sign that person's not really a relevant source of information for you because they've got a vendetta. And I think that there are people out there right now who are looking to take shots at Izzo, looking to take shots at Michigan State. And there are reasonable conversations to be had. And there's a difference between that. It is absolutely fair to write a column or have an opinion that says, I don't love this style of coaching. You don't have to play for him, but I don't love it, and here's why, and I think you ought to be able to coach differently and whatever. That's a fair conversation to have. People can agree to disagree. But when people come out and just make him sound like this villain because of it, who don't know him, that's a totally different deal.
Okay. Sunday versus Ohio State is senior day, so what I thought we would do is kind of talk about we don't have to talk too much about the four seasons, but I want you guys to kind of pick up a moment throughout their 4 years in their career at Michigan State that kind of stands out for you, and we will go – well, we'll start with – Graham's muse, Connor George.
So Connor George, to me, forever will be the guy who almost made it in the rotation every year, and so I would naturally write about it. Like, you know,
you had your Connor George game.
Every year. Because here's the thing Connor George had, and he'll always have this, by the way, is he actually played meaningful basketball at Michigan State.
He did.
He was not somebody who, you know, you can say Jack Hoiberg had his minute when he started, but that was done as a gimmick in a way because his dad was...
A tribute, I think.
Yeah, a tribute. That's a better word than gimmick. Yeah. But
it wasn't a gimmick. That was a tribute.
It was a tribute. That's a better way of saying that. That's why I'm not very good at my job. But but Connor George was somebody who, when Miles Bridges was out at the PK-80,
yep,
that was, okay, he's the next guy who fits into the rotation. When they're against Oakland this year and they're down Rocket Watts, okay, he's the next guy that fits in the rotation. Last year against Minnesota or Bradley, I think it was Bradley in the NCAA tournament, extreme foul trouble, Gabe Brown, Aaron Henry not playing well. He gets 5 minutes of important basketball at the end of the first half in the NCAA tournament game that was close. And so I think those are the things I'll remember for him, that he always wanted to be in the rotation. Every year he'd look at the recruits and be like, now that's not looking good. You know what I mean? Like, they needed a year where they just missed on more kids, I think. But he will get to leave, and he may still play more because he is a sprained ankle away. And they have a little more depth maybe at his position than they do other, you know. But he is still a sprained ankle away. He is extreme foul trouble away. He is a guy they trust to give them minutes if they need it. And he'll always have that. I would not be stunned if there's a game at some point. You know who's made for the Big Ten tournament? Connor George. You know why I shouldn't be coaching the Big Ten tournament?
Because Connor George and Jack Hoiberg are the starters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With Foster Lawyer at the center.
Yeah, that DePaul game would be my moment for him. And in part because, I mean, he's 6'4", is playing out of position in a lot of ways against some of those athletic wings. But, you know, that was a game. I mean, we talk about Bridges was hurt, but I mean, they were without, I think, Carter and Schilling at that point that year. I mean, their numbers were depleted. You know, that was a tough time. And you know, he gave them those valuable minutes and rebounds. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he was scrappy. He is scrappy. I guess he's not gone yet.
I mean, he had, what, five rebounds against Oakland this year? I mean, he's a guy who rebounds the basketball. That's what he does when he gets in there.
And I think there was
– finally made
it. I will say this, that you know, we don't – you know, just the way the practice structure is and everything being off the record, I think it's safe to say that I've seen Connor George probably hit more shots than anybody on that team. That you're just like, geez, he hit an 80 footer the other day,
and that's what I'll feel bad for him a little bit. As I felt even against like Oakland, he's a guy who's a shooter,
Yeah.
And he's not never, I mean, part of it is you come in, you're in for a minute, you don't get a lot of time. Like in Oakland was his first three he had hit. And to me, I always thought if he came into a game and just somewhere along his career had hit like three threes, you know what I mean? Where all of a sudden they had looked at him a little differently in games, like we could use that in a game we're not shooting well. That might have changed his career a little bit here and there. Because this team this year, for example, is a team that does not shoot the ball well. If he had even played against Oakland, and Oakland does not defend that well.
Right.
And so if he had against Oakland it had like 15 points on five threes, I think all year when they struggled to hit shots, there might have been games where Izzo said, let's give this guy a shot. You know.
Okay, we are going to include Joshua Langford in this. My random take is I think he comes back next year. I know there's a lot of evidence to the contrary, but that's just coming out of left field here. Joshua Langford.
Yeah, I don't think his intention is to come back, but I think obviously I think it makes some sense to come back just based on when his foot may be 100% ready and what pro opportunities will be there and if you can put a full healthy year together.
Sense for who, though? That's the thing.
Sense for him.
For him, maybe, but for the program standpoint, when you have one scholarship open, I think some of it depends on who would be that person for that scholarship and are you willing to take that risk of another injury-filled year with Langford and use the scholarship on him.
Well, I think if you can get senior Joshua Langford, if you can get the player he once was for a year, if you can go rocket watch Josh Langford, I don't know if Tillman's going to come back.
It's a gamble because you won't know that until 6 months after the surgery, 8 months after the surgery.
I think if he wants to come back, you take him back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the Izzo way. I mean, he would absolutely take him back, but I do think that there is a risk that goes with it.
Sure. But no, to me, you know, I'll sort of remember, I mean, to me it's become a sad story. And, you know, I talked to him just a week and a half ago or a week ago, and he's very at peace with things. But I don't think that was always the case, and I think it's what might have been because he was a guy who, if you remember, like the Louisville game, that'll stand out to me, what he was becoming. Cassius Winston gets into foul trouble, goes into overtime. He's imploring his team. He's you can see the leadership getting buckets. He just took over. And you saw a little bit of a takeover gene. He never really got even in the Big Ten play as a junior. And, you know, a 15-point-a-game guy. And I it would have been very interesting to see this team this year. Last year's team a little less. I think McQuaid, took that role fine. But I think this year's team especially.
Yeah, to me it's going to be that Texas game out in Vegas where you started to see everything come together for him. You know, he had 29 points. I mean, he'd always been that lockdown defender, but that was the game where he just was hitting step back shots. He was hitting from behind the arc. He knew where the arc was, which would have been interesting to see him with the new arc to see how many inside the arc threes he would have had versus deep threes. And you know that was one of those moments where you said that team can make a run to the Final Four, and then he's gone a couple weeks later. I mean that. You know, and he hasn't played since. So it's, you know, that moment to me was what maybe the frustration point would be for Joshua Langford. What could have been?
Yeah, for me, the only game I've covered as the primary LSJ writer at the game was his last game. He played the first half versus Northern Illinois. The SID next carry says just a little foot problem, nothing to worry about, and then he has not played a game since. So. I covered what appears to be, at this point, his last game in a Michigan State uniform.
Because I remember, I was at a funeral that day, and you were at a bowl game already.
Yeah, I thought you guys were both at the bowl game. But
I was leaving later, and I thought I was going to go to that game originally, and then I had a funeral last minute. So that's sort of what, yeah.
Okay, Kyle Arntz.
Not that I would have done any of the beat work. I would have not going to get my hands dirty.
Kyle Arntz.
That's my silence point.
Yeah.
So. Boy, for Arntz, I mean, you know, it's hard to think about Kyle Arntz without thinking about that Michigan game last year. You know, watching him after every injury that he's had and playing through the back injury and all the things that he had done to try and keep himself on the court, then laying on the court really to the point where he thought it was it. That was it. And it somehow managed to just be it for that season, because now that he's back, I think that's been such a big moment for his team. I mean, a lot of things came together when Arntz started playing 15, 20 minutes a game again. Toughness, the intensity of all the other guys. I think that they realize that. But to me, the one game is going to be that, I think it was the Florida game, where he throws down a dunk to win it. I mean, it's a pretty no-brainer moment, okay. Phil.
And he scored 7 points in the final 3 minutes.
I mean, he's had some other moments where he's hit some big threes, and, you know, I think if you see Matt McQuaid's trajectory throughout his career, I think you could have seen the same kind of trajectory with Kyle Arnes. But at the same point, I do think that, you know, I think both Arnes and Winston, I think their biggest moments might be ahead.
So with Arnes, yeah, and I, Arnes is very much he's become a guy that I talk to a lot. You're not quite the Russell Bird level of go-to locker room guy, but a guy who I can have a conversation with, and he'll give it to me straight. And he's also become somebody I've realized how much fans root for, because a couple pieces I've done on him have exploded just sort of the metrics we keep track of, be it subscriptions or page views or things. And you don't realize
things of that nature.
Yeah, things of that nature. I mean, I don't think I always realized at the time when you tap into when people are really hoping for him. That Florida game you brought up, did a column on him that day. The Nebraska game where he just now, and that really took off. And people really, and he had basically took a leadership role in that. Said he was fed up with the way they were playing and at halftime. And I think. People just root for him. They've wanted his. I think they view him as a nice guy, a guy who gives everything, a guy who's on the floor even when he's hurt, a guy who they've heard yelp and cry when he hit that ankle injury at the Big Ten tournament, one of the worst sounds I've ever heard coming out of a person.
Awful.
And so I think there is people really for him want a good finish, and I think that's somebody people root for.
Yeah. Well, we could do an entire podcast about Cassius Winston, and maybe we will in the offseason, but for now. Cassius Winston.
Yeah, I mean, I, to me, what always stands out is his eyes. He has the kindest eyes of anybody I've ever covered. And he looks at you, and when you're asking him a question, like there's a genuineness in his listening and his responses. And my favorite moments, though, with Cassius Winston will always be, Cassius will answer any sort of question to anybody. And TV reporters often have different sorts of questions. How do you feel about this? What did you think about this? How big is this? They're not complex questions, right? They're looking for a soundbite. And sometimes they're not phrased all that well. And if you're an athlete, they can wear on you a little bit.
Right.
And sometimes there'll be a pack of people around, and I'll kind of chime in. There's reporters, and he's getting asked sort of a lot of the TV-type questions. And all of a sudden, he'll just look up at me. It's like looking for refuge. Ask me something else. Help me. And his eyes look at you like he'll answer the question and look right at you. And that's sort of a respect of the conversations you've had over time with a kid, or a man at this point, but, you know, who you just, and then, you know, one other thing that'll always stand out to me is the first time I ever heard his name. And I was doing a feature, or I didn't even know if I wrote it. I can't remember exactly what I did. Michigan State was hosting an elite camp on campus, a team camp, and his Jesuit team was there, and it was after his freshman year, and 14-year-old Cassius Winston was like the buzz of the whole damn thing. And that will stay. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
And I bet you were expecting a high flyer. And
well, and I was there actually. The guy who didn't show up, who just sort of tells you that unreliable Josh Jackson wasn't there. His team showed up, and he didn't make the trip.
Well, I think there's two moments for me on the court. Well, there's a lot of. I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of moments, and I think there's too many to pick from. But I'm going to go with the first moment where you realized that something was different about Cassius Winston, and that was the Connecticut game out in Portland.
You've talked about that game a lot, yeah.
And that was his takeover in that game was the moment where you saw a kid who's going to be a pretty good college point guard who could elevate people around him showing on a national stage against a traditional power program that he could take over a game. We saw that all last year and at times this year. But that was the first moment where you saw that this kid, and Izzo's talked about this, he thought he'd be one of the best passers in Michigan State history. He didn't see the scoring. That was the first time we saw that. And it was like, where did that come from? I don't remember how many finished with 32, 28 in that game. I mean, but the second half, I mean, everything. It wasn't a shot that he was going to miss. So on the court, that's it. And I'm gonna give a little tease to my Sunday column as well, and this is after the Penn State game the other day, before all my travel problems. But that's another story altogether. we were, and I talked to Graham about this a little bit today. We were coming out of the locker room. We just wrapped up all the interviews. A couple players were coming back in to hustle guys along and get them back out to the bus. And Winston was the last guy left in there that hadn't come back in there. And so he was gathering up his stuff. And pretty much all the other reporters started to filter out. And he looked at me, and you talked about those kind eyes. He looked at me and goes, "Hey, how are your daughters doing?" This kid just had one of the biggest moments of his college career in a big comeback, has himself on the verge of another Big Ten title, dealing with everything that he's dealt with in his own life, and you're asking me about my daughters. That speaks volumes to who he is. And nobody talks about this anymore because of all the personal tragedy he's gone through with his brother, but there was a moment in January, February, March of 2018, where Cassius Winston was the voice of the entire Michigan State University. Tom Izzo was muzzled. Mark D'Antonio went silent. There was no athletic director. There wasn't a president. And Cassius Winston stood there and answered every question asked of him about things that had nothing to do with him, nothing to do with his team, nothing to do with the guys standing around him. That, to me, is what the legacy of Cassius Winston is going to be. It's what you see on the basketball court, everybody's going to remember, but the transcendent thing that you see from Cassius Winston are all those other things.
Yeah, well, building on what you guys have said, it's like, I mean, my interactions with him are basically limited to Moneyball, but, I mean, he talked to especially this last summer, he was just hounded every time he was there, but he signed every single piece of memorabilia that was asked of him, talked to everybody, and even, you know, the couple interviews I had with him, you know, he could not have been nicer about it, even though I'm sure he was overwhelmed.
I think one of the things about Cassius Winston is there's a question about where he ranks all time, right? We can have that debate, where he is as a player. In terms of beloved, if you put that out there and the way people feel about him, I think that puts him in a stratosphere that's...
Why he's beloved. Yep. Because, you know, there are guys that are loved because of what they do on the court, like Mateen Cleaves, but everybody knew Mateen Cleaves had off-court issues when he was at Michigan State, even way before anything else. There were a few things here or there. People knew about that. There, you know, Miles Bridges, I think, was in that realm as well, and then the NCAA scandal hit. I don't think that affected him long term, but it certainly was one of those things that raised eyebrows where people were like, "Wow, and I think him as well, that kind of, you know, for him, I think it was like, "Oh man," you know, because he's a great guy. I don't think it has anything to do with it, but with Winston in particular, there's a whole package there, you know, and he's a 4-year guy. He's a kid who could have gone to Harvard, as everybody knows. But it was all those other things too that I think that has made him special.
Two more.
Send me the transcript of this, please, so I can just write my column like that.
Will do. Two more items here before we call it a day. We're gonna switch sports here, move to football for a second. Michigan State has hired a defensive coordinator, specifically Mel Tucker's hired a defensive coordinator, and that is Scotty Hazleton, who was previously the defensive coordinator at Kansas State. What are your guys' thoughts on Scotty Hazleton as the new DC?
Yeah, interesting hire. I mean, you now got a staff that has Michigan State's defensive coordinator last year, Florida State's defensive coordinator last year, and Kansas State's defensive coordinator last year. What's sort of interesting about when a coach who's a defensive coach who's been a defensive coordinator makes a hire like this is, you know, it's certainly in line with what they want, but it also is going to be interesting to see how this all works. You know what I mean? Like, this is, and again, this is going to be Tucker's vision for a defense. Mark D'Antonio's vision for the defense was always at play before, and I'll be very curious to see how it all works. I mean, he looks like a guy who has an energy to him, who is well regarded. I know that Cody Tucker, who used to work at the LSJ, that people know because Hazleton was at Wyoming before he was at Kansas State, and he was well regarded there. Players loved him, and I think he's somebody that the players will enjoy playing for. The problem people are going to have, but here's what's funny, is people are less enamored with the offensive coordinator than they are the defensive coordinator hired by Mel Tucker. And what's going to be funny next year is that the offense, I believe, based on the playmakers back, is going to be better than the defense. And so next year, the first cranky thoughts from people is going to be about Hazleton. Like, that's the way it works. I don't think it'll be on him. I think it's just going to be a defense that's going to be young in some spots.
Yeah, I think Hazleton's going to be one of those guys that is the energy guy, a la Pat Narduzzi. I mean, he's young. I mean, he's... You know, that he's 46 years old, and that's, I think, one of the things that you're seeing with this whole staff. It's It's kind of about where D'Antonio and his group was about 13 years ago when they came in. They were all younger, hungry guys. Even guys like Mike Tressel, who's been around for that long. I mean, people forget how young he was on that staff. But Hazleton's a guy who's very well regarded, as you said. He's got that NFL experience and pedigree with a couple years in Jacksonville. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he meshes with Tucker's philosophies and how Tucker meshes with his philosophies. Because the one thing I think that when you saw Mark D'Antonio's defense, you knew it was Mark D'Antonio's defense. But, you know, he also had some things where he worked with his coordinators. Now, is Tucker going to be that kind of guy? It seems like it. He seems like an adaptable kind of coach. And I think that, you know, you can't fit a square peg in a round hole, but everybody's got their principles and concepts they want first and foremost. And it's going to be an interesting ride. It's going to be a very interesting ride with these coordinators.
All right. Very last thing before we check out of here. Predictions for Sunday's game versus Ohio State.
I mean, I've seen this game go wrong before.
Yeah.
I mean, the Draymond Green's finale was a great example of that. Which wound up leading to an epic rematch in the Big Ten Tournament Final. One of the times I thought the Big Ten Tournament had a lot of meaning. You know, this is their only meeting of the year, which is interesting. Ohio State's playing pretty well. They will have played again because they play this evening against Illinois. We're recording this on Thursday evening against Illinois. And Michigan State, the question I have is Michigan State has not handled the big event games well. Draymond Green's finale, the Mel Tucker game day, one that just happened a couple weeks ago. Who were they playing? Maryland, right? Yeah. Those sort of games, when there's a lot of emotion and other things going around them, I think it's probably important that the senior day ceremony is after the game in that sense for this. And so you senior days affect everything, right? You should never gamble on a senior day game, and I'll tell you why. Because it's always going to affect it. You don't know for the positive or negative. When Sean Respert and Michigan State beat Michael Finley by 25 points in 1995, they weren't 25 points better than Wisconsin. That was senior day, in effect. Respert couldn't miss, right? And
they were 22 points better, and Respert pulled up from about 95 feet away over Finley in that one-on-one matchup.
Correct.
Right in front of me.
Senior day. But sometimes teams are a little more discombobulated, too, and Ohio State's playing well enough. I think Michigan State wins the game because picking them to lose at home is sort of absurd, even if they lost a couple. But I think it'll be a good game. Penn State always gives them trouble, or Ohio State always gives them trouble. I'll go Michigan State, 77-72.
Yeah, I think one thing about Ohio State is that when everything fell apart for them early, they were kind of in that mode where Michigan State was, where you just have to start trying to play a lot better basketball, and they have been. And I do think that there's something to be said about knowing and being in a spoiler role in this game. There'll be some energy and some swagger, I think, from Ohio State. But I think that one thing that you've seen from this Michigan State team the last 2 weeks is toughness, resolve, grit, tenacity, all those things that allow you to play through some of that. I think they win this game 74-67.
I'm with you guys. I think Michigan State earns at the very least a share of the Big Ten title on Sunday.
Which is a big deal.
Yep.
It's a big deal, as we got into earlier.
Any final thoughts?
I think that's good. We'll come back next week and we'll talk about this meaningless Big Ten tournament.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_Couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.